There's like 40 of them.
Will you say sci-fi feedback?
Sure. Sci-fi feedback. Oh, crap.
I was reading the word.
Sci-fi.
I know. Oh, sorry. Okay, here we go. Sci-fi feedback.
By Christian, bringing you theology at warp speed. I'm Matt Anderson.
I'm Kobe Radcliffe.
And we are back!
Seriously? Please stop that. Alright.
Sci-fi feedback. People love it. They want to hear us talk about them on the air, and we're doing it today.
Absolutely. We're doing a lot of it today.
So, Kobe, hello.
Hello, Matt.
Thank you for joining me here today.
You're most welcome.
This is what we're going to do. We're going to read emails that we've received. And I'm also... So I've sent you the emails. Meanwhile, yes. I'm going to go to the website because you might not know this, but on every page... Okay, so on the pages that have the specific podcast,
yep.
You can comment below.
There's a comment
below.
List. Yeah.
So you can go to our main page, thescifichristian.com. Then you can find the podcast you want to listen to, and you can listen to it on the page and comment below if you want. So people also will comment on Facebook. They'll comment on voicemail.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, in fact... Sometimes I like to start with voicemails. Do you want to do that?
Yeah, let's start with the voicemails. Right. Get them out of the way.
Ben Avery, who is from the Strangers and Aliens podcast, who we're feuding with.
Ugh.
And in fact, I just heard word from Daniel. I think we've narrowed down. I think it's going to be me and Daniel versus the Strangers and Aliens. Because Kobe, you said you don't necessarily need to be there. And Ben has flat out said he doesn't feel like he's feuding with them because they're on his side.
So, yeah, pretty much, yep.
So, yeah, let's listen to Ben Avery's. I think he's going to be talking about James Bond here on this clip, so here we go.
Hey guys, Ben Avery here from Strangers and Aliens, strangersandaliens.com. I just listened to your podcast about James Bond called Why James Bond is Sci-Fi. I think you guys are onto something, and I have a few suggestions for some follow-up episodes to this series of topics. Maybe a Why the Lord of the Rings is Fantasy first, followed by... Why the Avengers are superheroes, and maybe after that you could do why Jaws is a shark movie.
What is he saying?
But seriously, you guys left out a lot of examples of sci-fi in the James Bond series. There's lots of, you know, all the lasers.
Oh, I get it. Never mind.
And, you know, not just the one that's going to cut Bond in half, you know, starting and going. But anyway, the laser that's made from stolen diamonds that can destroy a target with pinpoint accuracy by a satellite in orbit, and then on Her Majesty's Secret Service, which has a plot using hypnosis to make beautiful women with allergies carry a plague out into the world that would sterilize the world's agriculture. And The Spy Who Loved Me, which has a plot to eradicate humanity on the surface of the Earth so a new kingdom of man can be started underwater by an evil villain with webbed fingers. Blofeld creates doubles of themselves. You guys mentioned Moonraker, which even though Kobe was very dismissive of its use of a space shuttle, that was science fiction at the time. Moonraker came out in 79, and the shuttle didn't go up until, I think, 81. Obviously, they were, you know, using the hype of the shuttle program, which had been in development, but they were slightly ahead of the curve there. Speaking of hype, James Bond is a series of following and copying and ripping off. The most egregious example being Star Wars and Moonraker, but almost every Bond movie you can say, okay, what popular movie are they ripping off this year? So to me, sci-fi takes our current knowledge of science and extrapolates on it, imagining what if. And while the James Bond books don't really do this too much, and I know Ian Fleming wasn't happy with the movies or the time they were made, even the most grounded ones have elements of science fiction and, honestly, fantasy with James Bond's magical gambling luck powers. And it might be accidental. They were just trying to make each movie bigger and bolder and more outrageous. But if it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it just might be Sean Connery trying to sneak underwater wearing a duck hat. Anyway, back to On Her Majesty's Secret Service. As a fan favorite, I was surprised to find out. I like it a lot because of the tone it strikes, trying to be something different than what the Connery Bond movies became. I like Lazenby as Bond. I know that he has a fan base. I wish he had a chance to do at least one more. But honestly, that's one of the better Bond movies. Finally, I have to address a theory that was put out in your episode. It's something I've been trying to figure out myself. Are these Daniel Craig movies part of the original series, or are they their own animal? And one thing all the Bond movies did was acknowledge the past. The terrible events of On Her Majesty's Secret Service are the biggest example. The Blofeld character, which...
And it cut out there, because he was saying quite a bit, and
went too long.
And went too long. So do you want to hear the rest of that?
If it's useful.
Okay, cool. I'm going to play the rest, but don't type on your computer when, because I can hear it through the headphones.
It was important stuff.
Okay, so I've been leaving a long message. I'm sorry. I got cut off. anyway, I was addressing the other guy and his some of his theories there about the Daniel Craig movies. And I was saying that on Her Majesty's Secret Service has some pretty bad things happen, but those are all referenced by the Sean Connery, the Roger Moore, and the Timothy Dalton movies. So, Casino Royale, if it's part of the series of movies from Dr. No to Die Another Day, takes place first. It has to. Quantum of Solace takes place immediately after, so that's all right before, you know, it's before Dr. No. So the original series can only be placed in one of three places. In its own universe, and Daniel Craig's movies are not a part of the Dr. No to Die Another Day series, or between Quantum of Solace and Skyfall, which is what other guys suggest. But there's one problem with that. If there's one Moneypenny, why does James Bond not know her? And if Moneypenny is the same Moneypenny, and Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace, or Quantum of Solace precede all the others, this movie follows those movies. How can Skyfall be the Moneypenny origin if she's already appeared in all those other movies in between Quantum of Solace and Skyfall? So I was with your theory until I thought about Moneypenny. The other option is that Skyfall is the finale of the James Bond origin. Dr. No follows then Skyfall. And Skyfall put everything to place. And as a dude, Moneypenny's behind a desk, and all that banter between Bond and Moneypenny stems directly from Skyfall, and Bond is truly ready to face the world and go into Dr. No. But I think we have to go with Occam's razor here. What's the easiest explanation? Skyfall puts all the familiar pieces into place, ending the Daniel Craig Bond origin, but it's still its own universe, and I'm okay with that. Bond continuity was not complicated, but it was getting silly as some actors age, but Bond kept getting reset into a younger body. It just wasn't making sense anymore. So, enjoyed the episode, and like I said, I like James Bond, and I think it's science fiction, so I agree with you there. Bye.
Thanks, Ben, for that call. Kobe?
Yeah, that was a lot of information to take in. That was a long call, but it would be so great if Daniel was here right now. Yeah, because he pretty much responded to a lot of what Daniel had to say about it.
Yeah, and Ben Avery took my side, which doesn't is the happen. Right side to take.
I think it's because it was Daniel's opinion. That's why
you he think took your side. He doesn't like Daniel?
Or you mean the other guy?
Oh, that's not nice.
I didn't say it. They said it.
All right.
I love Daniel.
Do you want to read the first email that we have?
Let me just say,
I agree with Ben Avery that it has to come. Skyfall is maybe the end of the origin story, and now, I mean, they'll do more Daniel Craig movies, but then you could go from there into such things as Dr. No. So, good. So, I agree with you, Ben Avery. Right back at you. Awesome. Let's just go down the list of that Word file I sent you.
Okay. First one's from Ethan Irway. He says, hey guys, a few weeks ago I emailed to tell you about my Michael Belmont books. This is just a follow-up to let you know that I've recently uploaded re-edited versions of the first book, Michael Belmont and the Tomb of Anubis. So if anyone has downloaded that book to review it, please download the updated version, as I've done significant editing on it. The book is currently available for free on Amazon and Smashwords.
Just wanted to give you a little shout-out there. That's why we're reading this, because this was actually an email to me, but yeah. I just wanted to make sure that the shout out was out there for his book. Okay, go ahead.
And he also says, also, if you do have anyone interested in reading the book's review, I'd be happy to provide free copies of my other works. So thanks, guys, and keep up the good work.
I want to do this. I really want to review books, but it's just been such a common theme on the show that people know I take forever to read books.
Yeah.
And so I've started one now. We have a listener. I'm in the middle of two. One of our writers, Brady, wrote a book, so I started his. And one of our listeners, Alan, wrote a book, and so I've started his. Plus, I had a person who I don't think is a listener, but sent us because they Googled Christian and science fiction. So they sent me a book. Let me look over there. Plus, one of our writers, Dave, sent, before I had the Sci-Fi Christian, he just sent me one of his books. Actually, I purchased it from him, and I haven't read it yet. Sorry, Dave. I did start it, though, a while back.
Reading takes time.
Yeah, so all this to say, I want to do this book review thing in 2013. I'm worried, though. It's starting to become a task more than fun because I'm starting to get some piled up here.
Yeah, and it's not like I don't like reading books. I just don't have fun reading books. So if you make your book into a movie, send it my way. I'll watch it for sure.
Okay, let's read Theron's.
All right, I'll take it, I guess, apparently. Mm-hmm. It says, I'm a fan of the blog and the show. Now that you are working your way through religions and Christian groups, if you decided to do anything with Eastern Orthodoxy, I would be willing to come on as a guest. There you go, Matt, our guest host that you promised that never happened. And it says, P.S., someone needs to do something on Islam and the Dune series. Yeah, we've never done anything on Dune series.
Have you read Dune?
I actually have not, but I know something about Dune.
Yeah, anyways, Ben, so that's nice. Loves that book. So
maybe, I'm not surprised.
Maybe we should
read. Ben likes to read a lot.
And he, yeah. He
There's a lot of Dune books. There's a lot of them.
How many?
Let me count. One, two, three.
Wait, did you Google it? Wow, good work. Okay, this is kind of quiet.
You need to be talking while I'm doing this.
Oh, well, Dune, as you may not know, it was the inspiration for Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And so George Lucas took a lot of themes and even settings and character structures from Dune.
There are 15 novels and 6 books.
Wow.
By Dune. But what's interesting is that the novels, Mr. Frank Herbert, who was the guy who invented Dune, mm-hmm. he only wrote 7 of the novels, and then his son Brian and another guy named Kevin wrote the rest of them.
Oh yeah,
after he died. Frank died in 89 or something like that.
Yeah, I think I had heard that.
86, sorry.
Cool, good job, Kobe. I'm going to read a comment from Hank Harwell on our website about the Scientology episode, which you put together very well, Kobe. Great suggestion on that.
That was fun stuff.
A few other, I should say, I've had a bunch of emails of people not necessarily with feedback other than just saying that they really enjoyed that episode. So that was a good idea. Cool. And I think I might have doubted you a little bit. But
you probably did.
You did well. Hank Arwell said, a few other things about Scientology that I heard. Hubbard originally wanted to propose it as a scientific discipline, but no one in the scientific community would take him seriously on it. And mm-hmm. that's why he started this church. Also, in Battlefield Earth, John Travolta played the villain, not the hero. I thought we probably said that, but maybe we misspoke. But I did know that.
Our bad.
Okay, next email.
This one's from Ken Newman. It says, my name is Ken Newman, and I would like you to review my Christian speculative fiction novel, The Ark. The Ark was published by Sunbury Press at this website. Mm-hmm. Set in an antediluvian steampunk world, The Ark is a new spin on the biblical account of Noah. Hmm. And when's that Noah movie coming out, by the way?
Next year, I think.
Oh, good
stuff. Darren Aronofsky.
That'd be nice to see that, actually. Noah, the patriarch of the affluent House of Seth, is a troubled man. Despite his strong walk with God and his best efforts, his atheist wife, Kira, and their 3 sons have bought into the depraved world system around them. While Noah struggles with his wayward family, humanity is fighting and losing ruthless war with a hybrid of human and angel, a savage race called the Nephilim. We did an episode on the Nephilim.
I think he says that next.
Disgusted with rebellious humanity, the Lord has decided to destroy all of human life. However, Noah has found favor in his sight. Noah secretly builds the vast ship, unaware that he is the target of a deadly conspiracy. Lucifer, to prevent the advent of the promised Messiah, who will come from Noah's bloodline, has warned the Nephilim of the coming cataclysm, plotting the destruction of both the Ark and the House of Seth. The Nephilim will make certain that when the waters recede, it will be they and not humanity who will inherit the earth. If you ever, or if you elect to review my story, will a PDF or MOBI 1 file be okay? Thank you for your time and great, and may God bless you.
Yes, thanks, Ken.
Ken Newman.
I think I'm just going to have to publicly say I'm going to have to slow down on these book acceptings.
Dude, like I think almost everyone's going to have a book.
Well, we must have mentioned that in the show, and I can't remember exactly what I said.
But, I wouldn't be surprised if you did.
Yeah, so I maybe will eventually, but I think I'm going to start with the ones I currently have. All right, this one's...
it's addressed to you, so you're reading this one.
No, I'm actually going to go to the website. Here's some comments from Michael about our Catholicness episode. That was episode 90. He writes, you are both rather sweeping in your respective dismissals of Reformation Day. No doubt many Protestants don't observe it, but some of us from traditions that do, sometimes it's not mandatory or universal, tend to view it as an occasion to reflect on Christian unity, rather than a pep rally for Martin Luther. When I was pastoring, I really wrestled with his question because my congregation attracted more than one disaffected, disgruntled Roman Catholic who still identified as such, even though the church had hurt them quite a lot, and they never darkened its doors anymore. Reformation Day is, in itself, no better or worse than any occasion for remembering an important historic event. It's all about how you do it. Uncritical Protestant Jingoism. Are you reading this with me?
No, I'm not saying this right.
J-I-N-G-O-I-S-M. No. Education about the appreciation of Reformation. Emphasis. Yes. Okay. Then he goes on to say, in regards to Presbyterian Reformed Sacramental Theology, in theory, we believe that the... Okay, because like he'd said, he was a pastor in this tradition.
Mm-hmm.
In theory, we believe that there is the real presence of Christ. However, we do not locate the real presence either in the substance or elements. And he says Roman Catholic, yes. Hmm. Or in, with, and under them, a la Lutheran consubstantiation. Rather, we believe when God's people gathered around the table prayerfully and in faith, the Holy Spirit lifts us into the presence of the risen and ascended Christ. He feeds us with his real presence. The bread and wine / grape juice, fruit of the vine, exact form doesn't matter to us, are the body and blood of Christ in the Eucharist, but we don't try to explain how. John Calvin said, "Now, if anyone should ask me how this takes place, I shall not be ashamed to confess that it is a secret too lofty for either my mind to comprehend or my words to declare. And to speak more plainly, I'd rather experience than understand it." Then he left a website that you can link to go learn more about this. In practice, however, many Reformed and Presbyterian Christians are Zwinglians. This is actually named after a guy.
Isn't that Zwingli?
Yeah.
Not Zwiggly.
I know, I said it wrong, but we studied him in Christian history. Oh, and actually, I might even mention him on the History of Christianity podcast.
You probably did. If you didn't, you missed out on a history of
Christianity. Who view the Lord's Supper as an ordinance devoid of supernatural action. It is something we do, and we alone, in remembrance of Jesus. Again, though, this is the de facto view due to poor Christian education. It is not classic Reformed theology. Also, just wanted to state that I am... Not was an oh he is an ordained Presbyterian minister. I just said was again. Sorry about that, Mike.
Jeez.
Or in my denomination's current terminology, teaching elder as opposed to ruling elder. I am not currently serving as a church pastor, but my presbytery, the corporate, and this he's saying in parentheses, the corporate body that serves a function of individual bishops in our tradition, recognizes my writing of Christian education curriculum as well as my other activities in churches as a validated ministry. I won't bring it up, except it matters that I still have my ecclesiastical credentials. Thanks. By the way, even though my comments may not sound like it, I did actually enjoy your conversation. I do have to go with Ben on the communion and conversation with the saints, even though I don't myself pray to the saints. And all Reformed Presbyterian theology, I know, doesn't encourage it. So encourage it to say the least. Nor would I reserve the title saint for those who've been canonized. Jesus said to the Sadducees, who asked the trick question about the resurrection, God is the God of the living, not the dead. For to him, they are all alive. It is logical that death would not stop us from asking other brothers and sisters in Christ to pray for us, just as we do while they are still alive. There are some Protestant monastic orders. And they give a website. A great source for hearing some strong preaching. So, what do you think about all that? Quite a bit of good...
Wow. That's a lot of theology.
Oh, he's awesome. He's smart. And you need to know this. Mike is on our writing team, and he's just been promoted to lead writer with Max.
Congratulations,
Mike. So congratulations on that. And,
I think he makes some really good points.
He does. And he really writes about tons of deep, yet, it kind of ties in with our deep theology / deep interest in science fiction. He brings it all together on the website. So thanks for doing that, Mike. One last quick comment about the Catholicness episode. Steve Walker said, "Guys, regarding the purpose of sex within marriage, Malachi 2:15 says, 'Has not the Lord made them one? In flesh and in spirit, they are his.' And why one? Because he was seeking godly offspring. So guard yourself in your spirit and do not break faith with the wife of your youth." Cheers, he says. We must have talked about that a little bit. I think we talked about
I feel like it was Onan, mentioned, but I don't remember.
I think it was like Onan who had to marry his brother's wife and didn't want to have kids with her. So
we talked about it in one of my sexuality classes, too. Interesting stuff.
Yeah, so glad he brought in the Bible on that. So you want to read the next email about The Hobbit?
Yeah, I do, because it's addressed to you. So I'll read it as I am whoever wrote this, either Alan or Aaron.
I think it's from Alan, but I could be wrong.
Okay. Anyways, it says, "Hey, Matt, I just listened to The Hobbit podcast. Outstanding, as always. In the podcast, you happened to mention to Ben that you have a stack of books from listeners." Here we go with the books again.
His is actually one that I started, so that's okay. Yeah.
listeners that you intend, or promise, in quotes, to read, I just wanted to check in and make sure that Flight of the Angels arrived at your doorstep as intended. Did it?
So, yeah, part of this might be personal. Let me see. I have it all. Yep, that's... Yeah, okay, go ahead.
All right.
Oh, he didn't... Okay, no, I'm going to stop you. Okay. He goes on to say that we might be... That I had mentioned we're looking for writers and he might be interested in that.
Yeah. He does talk about his 374-page...
Yeah, I want you to read that paragraph.
All right. In addition to cranking out a 374-page sci-fi novel, both Alan and Aaron have been blogging since 2004. While our total blog history covers a wide range of topics, ranging from family life to stupid things that my dog did. That's great. Here are a few random and unedited samples from some of our posts that, at least marginally, fit the sci-fi film critic base that we so often return to.
I think we're just out there. Yep. Let's go on to the next email, because I think most of this is personal to me. But just so you know, Alan and Aaron, I've started your book. You are one of the only ones I've started so far.
I just wanted to point out that, again, Matt is throwing in personal emails.
No, here's what I do. Every email I get, I put into a Word file, if they're sci-fi Christian related.
Did you read them before we did this show?
I scanned them. So I didn't review them before the show, to be perfectly honest. Okay. I did not review them. They've been in... Like, you can tell... Go look at when it was dated, and that's when you'll know when it went in. That was dated November 26th. So that was about a week ago. 2 weeks ago.
Clearly had enough time to make sure that that doesn't have anything...
All right, read the next one from Jimmy.
All right. All right, it says, hi, Matt. Gosh, what the heck? Why are these all just...
Because I'm the leader now. Everybody knows I'm the one receiving this stuff.
I guess. I just got done listening to the podcast you guys did about Scientology. Hey, there we go.
Yeah.
It was really interesting and informative. I thought I would suggest possibly doing an episode on Christian Science.
Oh, I like this idea.
Yeah, me too. This is widely considered to be a cult, and they have some quite interesting beliefs. I know a lot about it because my dad's parents were Christian Scientists, and he was raised in Christian Science and actually left home as soon as he could in order to escape some of the crazy practices that went on. It could be interesting to look at. The show is great as always. Keep it up, Jimmy Jameson.
Jimmy, longtime friend of the Sci-Fi Christian.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about doing one on Christian Scientists?
I think that'd be awesome, because I know we talked about doing one, or doing a... Not a, well, kind of like a series of other religions.
Yes, I want to do it.
Yeah,
I had a friend, well, more of an acquaintance, that was a Christian Scientist, and so I know a little bit about it. I'd like to study more about it.
And it was Theron that said that we should do one on Islam too, which we have talked about doing.
Well, how Dune and Islam are connected. So,
oh, he wants to. Oh, how they're okay, but we could. But that's another one too. But yeah, Christian Science would be really interesting, because I don't know how many people actually know a lot about that. That'd be great.
Yeah, I like it too. All right, here's a comment on our Darth Mickey episode. This is all about... This is like, I think, the day that Disney bought Lucasfilm. So Mike wrote, I always enjoy your discussion, guys. You make a good team, and Daniel's Disney expertise is especially welcome in this episode. But what's with pronouncing Boba Fett with a short O sound? Have you not watched Jedi recently? How do you say it? Boba Fett or Boba Fett?
I say Boba Fett.
I might be saying it wrong.
I think you do.
I am finding it too hard to get worked up on one way or another about this development. This is about Disney buying Lucasfilm. I cannot read. If it deducts from my geek cred, so be it. But then he makes like a, you know, whatever. It's all about making money at this point. At least Lucas won't be involved in the actual creation of the films. So we are more than likely not getting things along the lines of the prequels. Let me just skip down a little bit. He said, I'm with Matt. No Disney castle can replace the 20th Century Fox logo and music. Let's face it, in a lot of ways, episodes 7 through 9 will never feel like real Star Wars anymore than the Clone Wars, as good as it can be. Also, my fanish discussions on what and how to reboot, as fun as they can be, just underscore what a dearth of new ideas there is in Hollywood these days. Does this mean we can see Star Wars characters in Once Upon a Time? After all, what is Star Wars but an outer space fairy tale? Young Jedi? What is this? Muppet babies? Sheesh. Nothing new under the sun. Hey, the Boba Fett cartoon from the holiday special is on the Blu-ray release, so the prints must still exist. Hey, that's cool. And Daniel wrote back, actually. I think that for most fans, the only real change is more Star Wars to choose from. I don't think Vader will show up in Storybrooke, but an object could show up in Gold Shop or product placement. We have seen a Tron lunchbox. Oh, that's cool.
Nice.
Good.
Next email?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. I'm not going to read a lot of this one because, again, it's a little personal stuff. Not really like
super personal
stuff, but
what are they? Okay, no. Go ahead.
This one's from Francisco. I love that name, seriously.
And he's our friend.
It's so much fun to say.
And he does resurrect or reject, I think is what he calls it. Hold on, let me look.
It's sci-fi movies to reject or resurrect.
Yeah, so, and he sent me one, and I usually play it on these sci-fi feedback episodes,
it's
but...
It's about the Fifth Element, isn't it?
But hold on, because we are saving it for the 100th episode, which I should say, it's coming up. In just a few short episodes, we'll be at the 100th episode.
You're so close. What is this, number 96?
Today is 96, and so... yeah, just be ready. It's going to be all about listener appreciation. So we'll be playing some promos from other podcasts that we think you should check out. That are, you know, friends of our podcast that have their own shows happening. And then I'm going to feature Francisco's to resurrect. Say again.
Sci-fi movies to reject or resurrect.
Yes. So this is a new feature on the Sci-Fi Christian, and I want to make sure it is featured. So I want it to be on the big show, the 100th episode. So watch for that in a few episodes. But go ahead, read his email.
There's only one other thing I want to mention from Francisco. He says, P.S. Mormon Faircast and Strangers and Aliens are going down this year for the Podcast Awards. That's right. Yes. Thank you, Francisco, for your vote, which I'm hoping that you voted for us or else that'd be weird.
I think the next one is from Ethan again. Remember how you said earlier? so we're reading them backwards chronologically. So yes, go ahead and read this from Ethan.
That's not... Whatever. All right, Matt, I just listened to the episode inviting your listeners to write in and tell you about the books they have written. So there you go.
I don't remember saying that.
I don't remember you saying that either, but that's fine.
Okay. Right. No, I should say, feel free, listeners. I do want to hear about it. I just don't remember that exact conversation. Obviously, it happened because I've been getting tons of emails.
Yeah.
And... go ahead, continue.
All right, it says he's currently has two series that he's writing. The first is a young adult fantasy series called The Adventures mm-hmm. of Michael Belmont, which we talked about.
Yep.
There's been two books released so far, of which seven are currently planned. Wow. Book one is called Michael Belmont and the Tomb of Anubis. Book two is called Michael Belmont and the Heir of Van Helsing.
Oh.
I nearly wrote you about this series when I heard your podcast about the Nephilim, because that plays a big part in these books. The second series I'm writing is a sci-fi adult novella called The Bleeding Star Chronicles. Ooh. All of these books can be found on Amazon, but I'd be happy to provide copies if anybody wanted to review them for the Sci-Fi Christian. Thanks again for your hard work on the podcast. It's great to have Ben back, but Kobe and Daniel have done an excellent job, and I look forward to hearing more of them as well. God bless your ministry. Thank you, Ethan. You just became my favorite fan because we were actually mentioned. Yeah, I appreciate that.
I appreciate that too, Ethan. Thank you. All right. Anything you want to comment on that?
Ethan Irway and I are friends on Facebook.
Oh, are you really?
Yeah.
I am friends with them as well. So good work. Let's go to The Hobbit. That's what I'm talking about. Here's a little comment on that. Mike writes, great episode title. Very glad you took the time to have this discussion. Ben is right about it being a great entry point into Tolkien's work, let alone fantasy in general. My fifth grade English teacher read The Hobbit to us aloud, and I fell in love with it. I didn't move on successfully to Lord of the Rings for many years after, but might not have ever given it a try if not for Mr. Lapierre's reading us The Hobbit. Oh, and shameless plug alert, I wrote a study guide for The Hobbit for Progeny Press, a Christian homeschooling company, still available, makes a great Christmas gift. And so then if you go to the page for episode 94, The Hobbit, that's what I'm talking about. Mike has a link where you can go buy this, and it sounds awesome. And Mike is, like we've already been talking about, super great guy, super awesome when it comes to theological stuff. And so I'm sure that he would also be great at helping educate your children homeschool style. Mike goes on to say, I agree with Ben that we fans should learn the value of contentment, but I also think we should keep an open mind toward Hobbit movies. I know I'm going to go in expecting to be entertained. Sure, they want my money, but I also think Jackson and the rest of the team are going to deliver a quality product. I think Colbert is going to be in so much makeup and on screen so briefly, if you blink, you'll miss it, and no one will know. And as for whether it's prequel material or not, Ballantine has been marketing the thing as the enchanting prelude to The Lord of the Rings for at least 30 years. So much prejudging and naysaying going on in this episode. Oh, that's not nice. No. Just kidding. We're friends. Also, kind of surprised to hear Ben dismissing the story for any thematical importance it might have, more or less. There is certainly plenty of stuff about greed beyond Smaug. Remember all the business about the Arkenstone? Matt, how does Gandalf trick Bilbo into joining the dwarves? Okay, let me think about this. Well, I'll read the rest of his thing.
There you go.
He tells Bilbo up front the morning at Bag End that he is looking for someone to join an adventure. He sends Bilbo running off after the dwarves the night after the party. Where does he trick him at all? If anything, he just doesn't give Bilbo a chance to say no. Well, I kind of felt like Bilbo didn't know there was going to be so many guests. He didn't know exactly what he was getting himself into. It kind of felt like at the beginning, like he was in a sense being forced into it. So I said tricked into it. But you said he doesn't really have a chance to say no. It's all the same. I feel like there was a little bit of more than persuasion. I would say almost manipulation. Although, I mean, it turned out good for Bilbo. Well, sort of, if you're okay with him being harnessed to that ring for years.
Ever.
And turning sort of evil. But anyways, yeah, there was some trickery on Gandalf's part. Anyway, Mike writes, still enjoyed the discussion, as always. What is it? So then there's a comment, Adam. Two? Oh, this is about the number of stars I gave it. I gave it 2 out of 5. Oh, Matt, okay. You lost so much esteem from me with that one rating. Also, did you not count my emails as being from a Catholic? Being that I'm a Protestant becoming a Catholic? I don't know what he's talking about there, but maybe we'll get to it when we start going through the emails. Also, did you not count my email as being from a Catholic? Being that I'm a Protestant becoming a Catholic? Well, we definitely count your emails, I think. Maybe we'll get to it, Kobe.
We might.
So if you see one from Adam, make a note that he wants us to talk about that.
All right.
I'm going to keep reading, though, here. Morality of Immortality, episode 86. Mike wrote, nice episode. Well, all except for Ben's irrational hatred of Star Trek. Not to mention Superman. You do realize you're getting 25 weeks of weekly blog content out of the Next Generation at the moment, right? Don't bite the hand that feeds you. Okay, so Mike is writing awesome theological discussions on the Next Generation. In fact, when you're reading your next email, I'll find the exact title he's been calling them. But loved all the good sci-fi Christian on-air, off-the-cuff theologizing. Even if scientists invent immortality and invulnerability, we are, as Matt said, still a fallen world, meaning Christ's death could never be rendered meaningless. If we have an unfallen world, there would be no need for the incarnation and the atonement, as in C.S. Lewis's space trilogy, right? Earth alone is a silent planet due to the fall. The gospel is more than salvation from death, though it is certainly not less than that. It is a restoration of a relationship to God, and that is something science cannot achieve. Science fiction often posits a religionless world, but we know from scripture that God never leaves himself without a witness, and God always preserves a remnant. So I think the fear that we would lose the true gospel altogether wouldn't come to pass. God will always preserve his church, gates of hell and all, right? Ben, the Mass, as I understand it, is a re-presentation of Christ's death, but isn't it also more than that? It's also communion with God, communion with each other, and with all the faithful of every time and place, a foretaste of the heavenly messianic banquet. I mean, yes, all this is from Christ's death, but at the same time, Christ's death was once and for all. Again, regardless of what science can or will ever do, it happened. It's a fact. It's accomplished. It is finished. So, of course, the Mass, Eucharist, would still have meaning. It is the means of grace God has given us to participate in the saving death of Christ, among other meanings, even if we become practically immortal. Also, glad to know you guys have our back should a demon show up for an exclusive interview. Do you remember that comment?
I don't, actually, okay. All right.
So, awesome thoughts by him, as usual. He had mentioned, and I'm not going to tackle the stuff as much that relates to Ben and what he wrote about the Mass and Eucharist, but he had mentioned the Space Trilogy from C.S. Lewis. Have you ever read that?
No.
Because I've read Narnia, but I've been wanting to read this. Shoot, we're talking so much about what I want to read. I hope I get to that.
Don't worry. We have more about what you're going to read.
Hey, oh, really? More books? More book suggestions?
Oh, yeah.
So for potential lack of follow-through in 2013, I want to do a Space Trilogy episode in 2013. So here it is.
Spoiler alert. Not going to happen.
Coming in 2013, an episode on C.S. Lewis's Space Trilogy.
You really need to stop saying coming in this year, because you just need to say from now on, possibly happening sometime in the near relevant future of many years from now.
Okay, your turn.
All right. It's from Evan Frericks. He's talking about how his wife, Elizabeth, wrote a book about sanctification. It's fiction based on her own experiences of growing up in a traumatic environment. The book is called Tales from a Spacious Place of Elizabeth Frericks. So he sent you the link to the first chapter, so you can check that out.
All right. I don't know if I will have a chance, but maybe soon-ish. Okay, does it go on to say anything? Oh, here it is. He'd love to send me a copy of the book, too.
Oh, nice.
I should just ask for copies of books, not because I'm trying to like rip people off, but that way ask for them now while they're offering, so it's fresh in their head, mm-hmm. and then just keep it as a to-do.
Yeah, maybe someday, who knows, you can have an awesome library of science fiction novels.
Yeah.
That'd be so cool.
Dang, I gotta get back to these people.
Yeah, you okay. really do.
You want to read the next one?
Yep, it's from Cristiano Silva.
Yeah.
He says, hi, or she, he, do you know?
It's a he. Yeah, he. We're friends
sorry.
On Facebook.
Sorry, Cristiano. My bad.
It ends in an O, see?
Oh, yeah.
Cristiano.
Okay, dude. Never mind.
And he's not from America. I don't remember where he's from. He told me once.
Dude. All right.
What? There's nothing wrong with that. There's okay. It's okay if people be international. Go ahead.
Thank you. It says, hi, I just heard the Nephilim podcast on the Sci-Fi Christian, and I wondered whether you know this work or not, and talks about a website.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is. Do you know what the website is? Did you go to it?
Yeah, it talks about a book series about the Nephilim.
It says, actually, the book is called Noah Primeval, Chronicles of the Nephilim,
mm-hmm.
and then Enoch Primordial. So that's interesting stuff. It's a saga that charts the rise and fall of the Nephilim, giant offspring of the fallen sons of God called the Watchers. We talked about this on our entire episode.
Yeah, probably.
Dude, I think this website ripped us off.
Maybe.
I highly doubt that happened. But yeah, so if you guys want to check that out, it's godawa.com.
No, you're going to give the whole website? Just go to...
No, I just typed in that.
Oh.
That's all I'm going to give you.
Okay,
it's just godawa.com. So go there, check it out. Why not?
Okay, should I, I'll read something next.
Yeah.
All right, from our Batman Live Instant Reaction, episode 83, Ben Avery from the Strangers and Aliens podcast, right? Normally, I enjoy a good old-fashioned train wreck, unless there are clowns and body bags involved. Yeesh, the good news, the thing has no cultural hold. Batman is safe, except to the couple hundred children who will be talking about this to their psychologist when they are adults and realize that was the moment everything changed.
Wow.
Did you listen to this episode? Tell me the Batman Live Instant Reaction.
I listened to part of it, but I was laughing, so I just shut it off because I'm like, okay.
Because you hate humor?
No, what?
Okay, listen. There was a scene in Batman Live and an asylum where they had dead bodies in body bags, but real people, like you could tell, like there were people inside hanging from the ceilings. And it was, and I kind of thought,
wasn't this a kids event?
Yes. And I kind of thought,
oh my gosh,
I thought that maybe it would be a trick and that the bodies would be lowered and then there would actually be like henchmen in there. It was, but it was not a trick. They were dead the whole time.
Oh my
gosh,
it
was messed up. Okay,
really messed up.
Episode 82 was our John Carter episode, and here is what somebody wrote. Amber wrote, I am typically a spectator in the podcasting world. However, my soul was deeply distressed by your last podcast, and I am compelled to speak out for truth and justice. The Barsoom series by Edgar Rice Burroughs is one of the greatest science fiction series created by man. The movie, on the other hand, is a perverse adaptation created by dense mind that is utterly offensive to any true lover of Barsoom. I'm sorry to call you out, Daniel, but your alleged love of this movie and the books sands my heart and labels you a heretic of Mars. Ben, I am able to... Is she talking to me? Because he wasn't even on that show. Ben, I am able to find forgiveness in my heart for you liking of this movie. Yeah, it's me.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, so I'm gonna change it for you, Amber. Matt, I am able to find forgiveness in my heart for your liking of this movie because you just do not know. On an encouraging note, your podcast is absolutely amazing! Exclamation point, all in capital letters. Thanks for sacrificing your time for my entertainment. It is... I'm glad you pointed that out, Amber. It does take a long time to put this together, and I've been preparing for the 100th episode, and that is also a time-consuming process. P.S. I don't believe that John Carter just vanishes from the world to world on some unknown whim. I think when he dies in one world, he is transported to the other. He dies of Barsoom at the end of Apprentice on Mars from lack of oxygen, and then dies on Earth at the beginning. Oh, this is a little bit of spoiler. I'm going to not read anymore. Spoiler alert. Daniel wrote, ouch, but at least you didn't call me the other guy. I agree the books are richer than the movie, but I still see the movie as one possible way to bring it to the big screen and an enjoyable way at that. Are there key differences? Yes. But I think Stanton was trying to capture key points on the story and deliver under 2 hours. Your explanation of his first Martian transfer along it being the right answer makes more sense than whim. It was a point not on the tip of my brain. And then Mike, who also... Oh my gosh, a lot of people like these books. Mike wrote, incidentally, the 1970s Marvel comic, John Carter, Warlord of Mars, was set in Carter's decade of Mars after most of the events of Princess of Mars, but before his return to Earth. At the end of the book, Kane was a big Carter fan, and Kane must have been the creator of this comic, and took great pains to place it within the Carter canon correctly. Then RC wrote, I haven't read the books, but really enjoyed the movie. It wasn't a life-altering movie but by any means, but it was a lot of fun. I imagine it will be a lot like Dune. Oh, it comes up again. I enjoyed the Dune movie, but understood it to be different than the books. Funny enough, on the books, I found the series difficult to plod through at times and eventually let it sit. Hmm. And though I haven't picked up any of the newer books that deals with past events, they seem very intriguing. I guess maybe a better comparison would be Lord of the Rings. I'm a huge fan of the books and the lore in the movies. However, they are two completely different things. My biggest beef with the movies was the changing of behaviors, particularly among Frodo and Samwise, but that's neither here nor there. But I support the other guy. Oh, this is really sad. In that the movie was entertaining and well worth watching. It has encouraged me to read the books at some point down the road, something the Hunger Games has not done. Then Alan wrote, listening to the podcast, a couple on-the-fly thoughts. You mentioned not reading the final novel, John Carter of Mars. Whew, don't bother. You dodged a bullet there. It's a bit of a mess. You can tell that the first half was penned by Edgar Rice Burroughs himself, but the second half, to our understanding, was written posthumously from his notes by family members. The quality drops off to a maddening level, to the point where you wonder if you ever even read any of the source material. If they ever even read any of the source material. Example. I'm not going to read the example for spoilerness. Excellent catch on the C.S. Lewis reference. And Denny says, great job. You have a new fan. Oh, well, this is great. This is back in August 6th, and Alan and I have since become friends on Facebook. He sent me a book that he wrote. So, oh, good. All right, Kobe, you're up.
All right, I have a really long one. Do you want me to read the whole thing?
Yeah, from Robin?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Robin. Robin sent this email, and I actually wrote him back because I just really liked it. I appreciated it.
It's a great email.
So, yeah, he's from the UK, so he wanted us to make sure that we knew Cullen was in
He's from Basingstoke.
Yeah, he wanted us to make sure that Cullen...
Google that, because I have no idea where it is.
He wanted us to be sure to know that Cullen isn't the only UK listener, so go ahead, take it away.
All right. I'm sorry, listeners, if this gets too long for you. All right, it says, hello from your most dedicated listener. Ooh, this is a shot at everybody else. Mm-hmm. My name is Robin, and I'm from the UK, not Sherwood or Nottingham. It says, yes, Colin is not your only listener from England. I started listening to your podcast last year and resolved to go through every episode in order from the start, although there were and are quite a lot of them, which is what we're going for.
Yeah, we wanted 100, and we're almost we're there.
Almost there. All right, to be completely honest, I wasn't too sure about you, Matt, and Ben.
What?
Partly because one of you had no interest in Star Trek, which we all know who that is.
Ben.
Yes. And the others seem to have only a passing interest, Matt.
That's me. I have a passing interest.
Yeah. Yeah. So I could see things going downhill right from this first episode.
I actually mentioned...
It's not a great way to start.
I mentioned Star Trek as one of my top five things I was currently interested in during the number one episode.
But it's only a passing interest. I've also felt Ben came across a bit of a bully, with poor Matt being constantly forced into his
business, that's
the side of things steamrolled. I totally agree. Ben is a bully, and he has bullied me since day one.
Keep going, Kobe.
This is the first time I got on this show. Everything I would say, he just would downgrade it. He would make fun of me for no reason.
Imagine my relief when you joined the show.
Yeah,
and
he doesn't even make fun of you anymore.
No.
It's all put on me.
Yeah, so I think he just needed somebody to bully.
First of all.
Can I give you a high five?
Yes. That was a good one.
So I can literally feel your pain because I have it still in my heart from season one. Here in season two, it's been a little bit better. I've got a little bit more respect because I kept the ship afloat. You, however, have been, kind of brutally bullied by him.
Just unwarranted. You know, and I've dealt with bullies in the past. So you know what? I'm just going to punch him in the face.
Good. So the next time you guys are on the show together, will you punch him in the face? That's going to be episode 100.
I think we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
Oh, my gosh.
Because we're going to be together in the same room, probably like 5 feet apart.
During the end of the year listener appreciation jubilee, I want you to punch Ben in the face.
I don't know if I can do that, but we'll see what happens.
All right.
Because I still like the guy, but whatever. It's ironic that Matt eventually took over the podcast. I stuck with those early episodes because I found some of the discussions interesting, my favorite being episode 23 with Lord of the Rings installment.
Oh, good. Stuff. Here's a shout out. I just re-released the Lord of the Rings episode as a time loop, which includes listener feedback at the end. So you don't have to wade through any news at the beginning. You can just press play, hear Lord of the Rings, and then hear some feedback, and then you're done. Go ahead.
Actually, he talks about that in just a second, but he mentions...
He talks about time loop?
No, he talks... Yeah, he does. He does. He mentions it.
Okay.
Not time loop per se, but the idea of it. He says he's been listening live, which we all know that's not true because...
Impossible.
Although, I think a live episode one time would be really interesting.
I don't know how to do that.
Dude, it'd be super easy and super fun. We could have our show going on live, and people can call in, and if their comments are good, we put them on
What the would they call to? Where would they call
to? You set up a hotline number.
I don't have a phone. I have a cell phone. So you want me to buy a
phone? Where do they leave voicemails on, then?
Google Voice. Okay, keep doing.
Okay, anyways. Since early this year, I must admit I miss the show when it's not on. I even went through all 8 parts of the history of Christianity.
That's amazing.
Oh my God.
That is amazing.
Dude, Robin, you might be the most dedicated fan.
Yes, he might be. I think I only know of like 2, maybe 3 people, including myself, not even Ben, have heard all those episodes. My teacher.
Have heard part of one of them.
They were part of an assignment. So that's amazing.
Also, I wanted to say if there was a fan of the year, it would have to go to Robin. Just for that comment right now? There.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just saying it. Robin's the fan of the year. If I'm honest, I think that what made the Sci-Fi Christian such a good listen was that Matt eventually overcame Ben's no-nonsense attitude and became emancipated. And I enjoyed it whenever he got one over on Ben. I think things became a little shaky after Ben left with Kobe, which he spelled with a C.
Oh, he's talking about you?
Which he spelled with a C, by the way. My name is spelled K-O-B-Y. And then he goes on to say, with Kobe, who sounds like a cartoon character.
What does that mean?
But in a good way. What is that, Robin?
I want the listeners to
you and I have to have a discussion.
Listeners, does Kobe sound like a cartoon character?
And if I do, which one? But he also mentions, and Daniel failing to hold my attention as much as the glory days.
Oh my gosh.
Robin, what the heck,
man? I shouldn't even have read this. This is, I mean, I like you, Robin, but that was a little rough. Yeah, did you know this was going to go on the air?
That was brutal, man.
We read all these.
It says, but now that Ben's returned, I feel there's a good mix of old and new presenters, and I only wish you could all 4 get together. Oh, snap. Oh,
episode 100 is coming up.
And then the sparks would fly. Oh, what kind of sparks? I also wish you would return to a full episode, like you were talking about, Matt, as you used to with Sci-Fi News, the main feature, and feedback. He wants them all in the same episode. Except for we're not going in that direction. We're going the opposite.
Well, I've split them all up this year. It was my choice. I like it better because I like people... Because as a host of the show, I wanted to recommend the show to people sometimes, and I would feel a little bit like, oh, I know it's going to kind of suck for them to have to listen to me and Ben talk about 20 to 30 minutes of that week's news just to get to the main topic, which I think is interesting.
And that's how I felt when I first started listening. I'm like, come on. I just want to hear about it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm sticking with this format. I like having everything separate.
Yeah, and he continues.
Wait, let me say. But to be fair, we stopped doing Sci-Fi News, not – like as a policy, but it just hasn't really happened.
Yeah.
Other than like Disney game or buying Star Wars and that kind of
thing.
Kind
of the bigger things were mentioned.
Yeah. But. So I guess I could have made more often some of the weekly updates.
Yeah. He goes on to talk about how he wishes there was more Christian in the Sci-Fi Christian. Not to say that we aren't Christians, but that he wants more of it mentioned.
I think that's fair.
He says it's fun, but I prefer it when it's fun and has a little more Christian perspective on things that are covered. And I think what really good will be about that is that we're going to go and do those other world religion kind of stuff. That's where we'll get into some heavy theology,
good. Which
will be good. He said a perfect example was the new feature by Francisco, which judged the length, detail, and perspective just right. So I hope his slot will continue.
Yeah, it is. It's going to continue. The next one will appear on episode 100.
Nice. It inspires me to want to do my own feature. I miss the regular Batman updates, but we can't do anything about that because there's not another Batman yet.
Mm-mm.
And he talks about it, next one coming out, how we're going to do those. He will at least expect us to. He also missed the Take That Science and Stanley quote of the week.
Yeah, that's the thing. The news did have some cool features.
It did.
Do you want to commit to coming here once a week to do news?
Once a week.
Maybe once every 2 weeks?
Maybe once every 2 weeks.
All right, this is what we'll do. Maybe in 2013. So watch for it in 2013. Sci-Fi News featuring me and Kobe. And if Daniel can come, he can come too. Maybe Ben sometimes. And we'll try to do more up-to-date news.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. With Take That Science, Stanley Quote of the Week, we'll have... Maybe we'll make up a new feature.
Yeah. That'd be fun to make up new features. If you do request, I personally am most interested in the mysteries of the Bible, such as Nephilim, which we covered. Revelation, that'd be kind of fun to cover. So I'd like more of that good stuff, please. He says, what about a feature on your views of how near and far future will pan out?
What does he mean by that?
I'm not 100% sure. I'm going to read it again just so maybe I understand it. What about a feature on your views of how the near and the far future will pan out? Oh, I get it. It's like, what are we view about 10 years from now or 50 years from now or 100 years
from now? You know what we should do an episode on, but maybe before 100 or at the beginning of the new year? Future? Like, what do you expect to see in the new year? Like, what can we look forward to when it comes to science fiction, TV, movies, books, things that we know are coming up?
Could that be like episode 99?
I don't know. I'm not sure if we'll actually do that. Just an idea.
Ideas are always good that we never follow through on.
Mm-hmm.
For some more recent feedback, I would say that I really enjoyed the Batman live reaction. Made him laugh a lot, which leads him back to the Star Trek in all its forms. I had to respond to Ben's comments about seeing the pilot of TNG. I'd agree it's not one of the best episodes they made, but taken in context, it can be enjoyed in a nostalgic look back at how that series began. If you haven't seen the series play out and aren't living in the 80s, then why would you care about a sci-fi story which isn't the best start to a Star Trek series? Agreed. Unless you particularly love space adventures, you probably wouldn't get a lot out of it. I must admit that someone who greatly enjoys all the Star Trek used to feel TNG was the weakest series, but watching over the years has given me a new appreciation for it, a deeper understanding of its place in the franchise, and a massive success that gave life to the golden era of the franchise through learning from TNG mistakes. DS9. Deep Space Nine, by the way.
Deep Space Nine for me. Oh man, this is gonna get some anger. It's my least favorite. And
I didn't enjoy it
because I watched it as a kid, and I think
Robin agrees with you. It was a mistake.
Oh, he says a mistake? Okay, good.
He says, through learning from TNG's mistakes, DS9. So.
I think he's saying that DS9 learned from their mistakes and was better.
That could be too.
Either way, I think it has more adult themes, which are good, and probably I would like more now, but I watched it as a kid. And so it didn't resonate with me, and it felt dark to me.
Yeah. Star Trek has some weird things going on, but it's Star Trek. What do you expect?
Mm-hmm.
I know Ben threw in the argument that people have told him to watch various Star Trek episodes or films, and he's never liked any of them. But of all the modern Trek pilots, I would have recommended the TNG one last. Both Voyager and Enterprise start in a much more interesting way, and DS9 has some deeper stuff going on that would be worthy of study, much as you enjoy examining the Nolan Batman films. Yeah, I would agree. Voyager and Enterprise are a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
It's often been said that if TNG was Superman, DS9 is Batman. So all of the Trek, I think Ben would get the most out of the series. I would advise watching the pilot, Emissary, though I would warn that he may not like all of season 1 and 2 episodes. Maybe could even skip to the feature-length opening of season 4. Wow.
Feature-length opening? He said skip it or skip to it?
Skip to the feature-length
opening. So don't watch seasons 1, 2, and 3 and just watch season 4 on?
That's weird.
That's interesting advice. I would do that. That's a less commitment, which I...
He says it's a good point to jump into the series.
Oh, a good jumping on point. Season 4 of DS9.
Yeah, check it out.
Okay.
But ultimately, if you don't like the Trek style, it doesn't matter what you watch. You'll be viewing it in a way that is looking for flaws to prove you were right not to like it.
Hey, I like the Trek style. I am a Star Trek fan.
Yeah, Star Trek is pretty good.
Not a huge fan.
Yeah, not a huge fan.
But a fan.
Okay, I'm going to say passing interest. Ben also said how bad the motion picture is, and again, I'd say it's one of those you enjoy once you've seen all the other films and want a sense of how the film series began, but I agree that even the director's edition can be hard for going for uninitiated and for the person today used in modern pace of film. It drags massively. Star Trek 2 and 3 would be a much better intro to the film world. 6 might also appeal, but my favorites are the first two TNG films, Generations and First Contact. Again, if you decide you hate the style, nothing's likely to change your mind, but you're truly missing out if you don't see the majority of DS9, the most underrated and best series of them all. Last paragraph here says, well, I've grown to love your blend of opinion, slight ridiculousness, and slapdash style. I agree. Matt's lack of preparation is frequently amusing. It's so true. Not bothering to load up a YouTube clip or listen/re-listen feedbacks in advance. As I said, having Matt and Ben back regularly has been appreciated Thank you very much.
How does that make you feel? Seriously.
I don't like that. Who likes to hear that?
Yeah, I mean, okay, sorry,
not, Robin. Not that saying I don't like Robin.
No.
This is a great email.
Yeah, I want you to continue reading, but I wonder, like, people write this feedback in there, and they say, oh, I loved it when you and Ben were together. Kobe and Daniel, too, though. Like, they kind of, like, it's like a backhanded, like...
It's a slap in the face, kind of, a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's not very nice. Come on, guys. Kobe and Daniel did a great job. The Sci-Fi Christian would be... I don't know. We might have stopped if it wasn't for you guys helping me out.
Boom.
So thanks.
That,
Robin. Want another high five for that? Thanks, yeah. Kobe. Okay, keep reading from that part.
Last sentence, or last two sentences.
I know, it says, I look forward.
Yeah, it's the last sentence.
My bad.
I look forward to hearing this feedback out soon, in about 3 or 4 months' time.
That's correct. Well, he sent this on October 23rd.
Yeah. I look forward to the Sci-Fi Christian boldly going into triple figures in the not-so-distant future. Thanks, guys. That's all from here. Robin Bradley, Basingstoke, UK. Why did I say it like that?
That was like Russian, right?
Yeah. That was angry German.
All right, and I'll read since you had such a big one.
No offense if you're German.
The next one, just as a note, is going to be about the mortality of immortality. The morality of immortality.
Have fun.
So this is what he says. Outstanding podcast, gentlemen. I don't know if anyone has brought this up, but from a certain point of view, as Obi-Wan would say, the death that God brought to Adam and Eve after the fall was the ultimate gift. Think about their situation right after the fall. No more innocence. Paradise destroyed. Pain and disease rampant. Regret? Constant. Now, what happens if they get a gobble of the Tree of Life? Bang! They live forever in that fallen state. Bummer. Adam and Eve had to die in order to have the possibility of redemption through faith in the one who was to come, who also had to die by the way for it to work. No death, no plan of salvation. Instead, an eternity of cruddy existence. Even in firm discipline, God is love. Yeah, he's cool. Good thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, how many people actually think about it that way? It's kind of true.
I love that. That's maybe... that's one of my favorites of the day so far.
Yeah, it's a good...
Good, and that's from the Flight of Angels team. That's a book that Alan and Aaron wrote.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
I'm going to read from the website again.
Oh, yay.
This one's way back to episode 71, Batman Month and Sci-Fi News. I'm pretty positive we haven't commented on this, so here we go. I'm going to quit rising to Kobe's John Carter bait starting now, which means you always tell people that you don't like John Carter.
It sucks.
What do you have against the Black Panther? Mike asks. He's cool. Ruler of a hidden African nation. Well, keep in mind, we're talking about news, and so he's reflecting on this episode.
Okay.
Ruler of a hidden African nation that has super advanced technology, martial arts, kick butt skills to rival Batman's. What is there not to love? So, okay, let me stop there. What do you think of a Black Panther from the Marvel Universe?
Not bad, but not one of the favorites. I mean, I've never heard anybody say, yeah, Black Panther's the best. No. He's an extra.
Yeah, I don't get Black Panther. I know he's important, and I...
Turns into a panther. Good job.
He doesn't turn into a panther. He wears a panther costume.
False. Watch the movies. Turns into a panther.
Okay, I could be wrong. Yeah, I don't like him. I didn't like the first Fantastic Four movie, but did enjoy Rise of the Silver Surfer. Not the least reason why was because it was rated PG and I could actually enjoy it with my son, who was 7 at the time and a huge Fantastic Four fan. I completely disagree with you, Mike.
Yeah, number one was Silver Surfer.
Well, they're both bad, but the Silver Surfer one was horrible.
That was one of the worst.
I'm so sick of the expectations that all superhero movies must be PG-13 or they're not going to be good. If any genre should be family fair, it should be superheroes, at least some of the time. I agree. That's good. And then he says, not really seen a demand for Ant-Man. Who wants this movie? Anyone? He can trick himself. So what? So do you know that Ant-Man is coming?
Yes, I do.
2014.
But, okay.
He'll be in the Avengers.
Yeah, I know. And that's the best place for them to be. Not their own movies.
Well, their pattern is open them with a single movie and then bring them
into. No, because they're not big enough. I'm sorry. You make a Black Panther movie, people are going to be like, what's that?
Do you remember when I speculated that Dark Knight Rises could win an Oscar?
Yeah.
In this post, he put a link that we could go check out. I disagree with myself now, but yeah.
You don't think it will?
No.
I don't think it will either. I don't think it will be even top five.
Okay, so then Daniel Butcher also comments, because this episode, Batman Month and Sci-Fi News, it must have been a Ben and Matt episode. Let me check it out.
Must have been.
No, it's you and me.
Seriously?
Yeah, Matt Anderson and Kobe Radcliffe. So... here's what Daniel says. Guys, Kobe has only watched like half of Casino Royale. Is that true?
No.
Okay. Emma is a fairy tale. This is from Once Upon a Time. She was born in the fairy tale world and in the book. I think the Big Six is being developed. What is the Big Six? Because it will make a ton of foreign markets. Is Big Six? Oh, that must have been. I think that's a Marvel movie that's based
on
a manga.
I think you're right.
But since the rest of us don't know anything about it, they will need to take time educating us. Mike, we are only step closer to bringing Matt Anderson into... Okay, he's talking about John Carter. Daniel says he has no excitement about Ant-Man. And he says the King's Speech is excellent. And shockingly, an Academy Award winner I would watch. Okay, I'm going to go to the next episode. Episode 71 was called The Amazing Spider-Man Movie Review.
Yeah.
Mike writes, props to Matt for being there with the Marvel facts. Yes, the narrator says the catchphrase, everyone thinks Uncle Ben originated. Yes, parents have long been established as spies, although I can't find a definitive reference to the issue where it happened. There's a Spidey villain called Spot who can teleport, but I can't really see them using the character in a major film. Frankly, the lizard didn't translate all that well to the screen, I thought. I like the human Kurt Connors performance a lot better, and also bits where he was in between human and reptilian. When he was full-on lizard, it seemed a bit cartoon and even stop-motion. But hey, it's a comic book movie, so okay. Doc Ock in Spidey 2 is still the best translation of a Spider-Man villain to screen. I liked the cast, although I liked the Sam Raimi cast too, and I didn't quite buy Garfield and Stone's on-screen chemistry. Disagree. Sorry, Mike. I liked them way, way better than Tobey Maguire, and I hate Kirsten Dunst.
Tobey Maguire is awful.
I don't think he's awful, but
Tobey Maguire is awful.
Andrew Garfield, much better. My favorite Spider-Man, for sure. I think you guys correctly called the end of the third movie. I called the end of the third movie, too. I actually didn't know Captain Stacy ever died in the comics, so that really took me by surprise. Martin Sheen made a fantastic Uncle Ben, although I have to agree with Daniel that Sally Field's Aunt May was really nondescript. I think it is strongly implied that she knows he is Spidey, even if the two of them are not going to openly acknowledge it to each other. The only detail that pulled me out of the film too much was the idea that it would never have occurred to this genius kid to Google his dead dad's name, especially when his aunt and uncle never talk about his parents. I think Peter would have been all over this Kurt Connors connection a long time before now. Oh well. Daniel, I'm surprised you were so down on this one, but you do make some valid points about sloppy stuff in the movie. But hey, don't trash Spidey 3. That's one of the best on-screen explorations of the nature of sin I've ever seen. But we'll have to have that discussion some other time. That is interesting. I've never heard anybody claim that has any sort of theological redemptive value.
Neither have I.
All in all, thumbs up. Viva Spider-Man and Viva Barsoom. Yes. Brady writes, Daniel, I could not disagree with you more. No emotion from Uncle Ben's death? Come on. And Daniel wrote, I'm sorry, guys. I could not get over how sloppy it was. Like, for example, how by the end of the movie, we are pretty much ignored an unsolved murder. Okay. I think I'll read one more. This is from episode 74, The Dark Knight Rises Prophecies. Well, here's from Mike. Well, here's a moment that has to go in the year-end retrospective. For the record, let me state the five senses. Wow, we all, as a sci-fi Christian, are even on the cutting edge. That is one of my favorite parts of the whole year. Also, like God is probably our most active listener. Good question, though, guys. Nice to have Ben back. And then he actually gave us a link to Wikipedia on how blind people use websites, because Ben had pointed out that he didn't think they could. This is awesome. Okay. They did establish Lazarus Pits in Batman Begins, right? So even if he dies, really dies, he could be brought back in a speculative final scene. For that matter, Ra's al Ghul could still be alive. I think it's Ra's. Do you say Ra's al Ghul or Ra's?
It's Ra's.
Okay.
Ra's al Ghul.
I do fear we've all got massively high, nigh messianic expectations for this movie. Here's hoping we all enjoy it. And I agree with him. It was pretty good. Okay, Kobe, you're up. Oh, wait, sorry, I missed Ace. What do you got? Oh, no. She just made a comment about how she wants Ben on the show more, which I'm not going to read. Sorry, Ace. Actually, is Ace a girl or a guy? I always forget this.
You always say this every time.
I know. Ace is one of Blondine's kids. I can't remember. Sorry. Okay, go ahead.
All right. This is from Dan, who's a new listener. He wrote in.
Cool.
It says here, Matt and Ben, thank you for no recognition whatsoever. Sorry. Appreciate it. But if he's really a new listener, he only heard the first few episodes, I would understand, but I doubt that's the case. Really love the podcast. I wanted to add a couple of points to ponder when thinking about immortality. I do agree that efforts to make humans immortal should likely be thought of as immoral, and also agree that where we draw the line is extremely difficult. As a scientist, though, not trained in medicine, I also believe in its fruitless, actually, believe it is fruitless, actually trying for immortality that is not attempts to extend human life. However, a topic you didn't address when you thought about immortality was that evil, suffering, etc., are not likely to going to go away just because we have the ability to be immortal. Do you believe that murder would actually stop? Or isn't it likely that it would become the first or second most likely way a person would die? But if you're immortal, you're not going to get, you can't be murdered.
Well,
or how did you guys present?
We talked about it as in there'd be ways to keep the body alive, but you could, so you wouldn't die naturally, but you could be murdered, or you could be like in a car accident.
Okay. If we've scientifically achieved immortality and it is universal, then the only remaining causes of death would seem to be accidents and murder. I would probably agree, since if you couldn't die naturally. Mm-hmm. And the world would get full too fast. I also think the question of immortality being universally granted would be an interesting question to think about. If such a thing was available, do you think it would become the most expensive product anybody could ever purchase? Yes. Unless it turned out to be a ridiculously cheap, easy, administered, impossible to control process, can't you envision a Logan's Run-like universe with competition for people to earn the right to become immortal? I don't know. Interesting questions there. I think Christianity would still have to offer, would still have much to offer to such a world. The only world I can imagine where we would have very little to say is a world in which not only immortality been achieved, but human suffering has also
been eliminated. That's a good point, because really, if suffering is still around, there's so reason to point us to Jesus, not just death.
Yep. To me, that is an even more difficult world to imagine, that one where immortality may have been discovered. Just wanted to throw that out as things to think about. Really enjoying the podcast, Dan.
Dan, awesome thoughts. You wrote this almost 2 months ago now, but thank you, and I hope you've continued to listen. And yeah, keep on sending in these emails. This is great. I'm going to go ahead and read the next one for you, Kobe, because you might notice it's from Alan again and Aaron, who wanted me to. This is the first one where they, like we said, we're chronologically going backwards. This is when they first told me about Flight of the Angels. So I'm going to just read the Amazon description of the book. Far from Earth, far from home, Captain Dex DelFalco leads the Angels, a renegade Navy fighter squadron on the run from their own government. Their crime? Clinging to their faith in a dystopian society that has outlawed all forms of religious expression. Meanwhile, Derek Mason, an ambitious junior executive, uncovers a dark conspiracy within his own corporation. His search for the truth sets him on a collision course with the Angels, pitting both sides in an epic battle with the fate of thousands of believers hanging in the balance. What are your first thoughts?
I mean, that's not a lot to go off of, but it sounds interesting for sure.
If you like Flight of Angels, our names are Alan and Aaron Rainey, and it would be an honor to have it reviewed by the Sci-Fi Christian. If you don't like it, our names are Jerry Jenkins and Tim LaHaye, and we wrote LaFine. Another quick thought.
That's awesome.
We're just a couple of northern Minnesota guys. As such, it'd be pretty easy to meet in person if you'd like. Our wives would appreciate a weekend in the big city. Wow.
Big city.
Of Minneapolis? Yeah.
Dude, that'd be fun.
Should we have them here in the studio?
Let's do this.
Let's have them in Ryan Strela's studios.
Oh my gosh, I wonder how Ryan would feel about that.
Yeah, you can't stay overnight here though, brothers. You could just come for the studio visit. That's it.
That'd be fun though.
Yeah, so that sounds pretty good.
Okay. I look at more promises to have people on.
I better not promises. This is something we'll consider.
Oh my gosh.
Something we'll consider for the new year. No promises here.
All right.
You want to read? Wait, let me read a little bit.
Wait a second.
I want to read from the website.
Okay, I'm going to skip a few of them here because they're
read that about one.
Something else.
That one from Eve is about a book she wrote or something. Okay, here is episode 80, Top 5 Sci-Fi Visionaries.
No, it's not.
Mike writes, H.G. Wells not only invented the time machine story, but also talked about genetic engineering in The Island of Dr. Moreau. And, as you mentioned, single-handedly invented the alien invasion genre in The War of the Worlds. That was in 1898, though. I think the radio version, which Matt alluded to, was not H.G. Wells, but Orson Welles. Yes, you're right. In 1938. Based on Wells' novel, of course, but not the same thing. Another of Wells' famous stories is The Shape of Things to Come. So I'm really taken aback that Ben doesn't consider him a visionary. And you've never seen The Twilight Zone or 2001? Sheesh. The sci-fi Christian needs more historical perspective. What's the beef with Eugene Peterson? The guy's a trained Presbyterian minister. I don't think the message should supplant any actual scholarly biblical translations. But as a devotional paraphrase, well informed by knowledge of the original Greek and Hebrew, it has its place. I had said, Kobe, that I don't really like the message because it's lame. It's not the Bible. It's a paraphrase, and it's not even a paraphrase like the New Living Translation. It's a paraphrase like this guy just wrote poem version of the Bible the way he wanted.
Pretty much.
Any thoughts on that?
You know, what's interesting is that for people that don't understand, or, you know, there's people that can't grammatically understand what's going on in the Bible, I feel like the message is good in that sense. There's a lot of people that use it because it's easy to understand. It really is. If you read it, you'll understand it. But I think if you're trying to get into a better understanding of who God is and your theological beliefs, it's probably not the best way to go.
Yeah, totally.
You might want to use something more along the lines of like the NIV or the NASB or any of that kind of stuff. Highly regarded things.
I like ESV.
You like the ESV. Okay.
What do you use?
To be honest, I think there's some that I would never use, but there's some that I would use more.
Tell me some that you would never use.
That I would never use?
Yeah.
The old school King James. I can't use it. I laugh when I see the word, so I wouldn't pay attention to what's going on.
What else?
The Message. I wouldn't use it.
Mm-hmm.
New Living. I wouldn't use it.
Mm-hmm.
They're just not, I mean, they're not good for what the translations are now from the Greek and the Hebrew.
I agree, especially about the New Living, because a lot of my friends like it, but it's way more paraphrasey
definitely
than like even NIV kind of straddles the fence of word to word translation and paraphrase, but I still like the NIV. I like ESV the most.
Yeah,
and I used to have an NRSV, but
those are
no
good.
One really uses those anymore.
No,
not that
they
that's
don't,
a reason not to, but
they're not bad.
NASB I've heard good things about, but I've never used it.
It's one of the more highly, you know, if you want a good translation, if you want like almost word for word stuff, that one's a better way to go.
Holman Christian Standard Bible. Have you heard of that?
Have you heard of the Thomas Jefferson Bible?
Yeah. That Holman Christian Standard is similar to NIV, but a little less good.
Okay.
Thomas Jefferson Bible is the worst one we've just mentioned because he's taken out all miracles of Jesus.
Yes. Every single miracle that Jesus ever performed, and he wrote his own Bible. So, yep, that's blasphemy.
Mike wrote, Matt, your mom had a great call on Arthur C. Clarke. Why are you laughing? Because I said your mom?
I didn't know where that was going. I'm sorry.
My mom had mentioned on the visionary episode that she thought Arthur C. Clarke was a good visionary.
Cool.
And Mike says, not only is he a sci-fi visionary, but he actually invented the modern communication satellite.
Nice.
And then he said, because we made a joke about Satan being a visionary, Satan is not a visionary because evil cannot create. It can only pervert what it's already created. Evil is therefore never original, only deviant. No. Are you reading along with me?
No, but just in,
it actually says only derivative, there which is not even close to the same word.
Deviant.
And thus, by definition, non-visionary. Fun episode, guys. Then Mickey writes, never saw 2001 or Twilight Zone? Still trying to wrap my head around that. Watch the show and that movie. People say that this kind of thing a lot. I really mean it. You should watch 2001 and a handful of Twilight Zone episodes like tomorrow or tonight. I should say Ben is the one that hadn't watched Twilight Zone. I have watched it quite a bit, although I haven't seen 2001. So much of the sci-fi world we know today is informed by themes introduced in Twilight Zone. So much of the imagery we know is sourced in Twilight Zone and 2001. Rick Lee James, who frequently has been on his podcast, wrote, I really love that Ben is back in the show. The give and take between Matt and Ben is always a fun listen. I echo most of what Michael already said above. I'm not a huge fan of Eugene Peterson's Message translation, but I do feel that his pastoral theology books are among the best that have been written in the last 100 years. If N.T. Wright, Thomas Merton, and Wendell Berry all wrote a book together, I'm fairly sure the result would be Eugene Peterson. Wow, that's strong. I would encourage you to read any of his books, especially A Long Obedience in the Same Direction, Five Smooth Stones for Pastoral Work, The Contemplative Pastor, Returning to the Art of Spiritual Direction, Working the Angles, the Shape of Pastoral Integrity, Under the Unpredictable, Plant an Exploration of Vocational Holiness, and Eat This Book, A Conversation in the Art of Spiritual Reading. Although the Message is not my favorite translation, at least I appreciate the that, unlike most paraphrases, Pearson actually wrote his using his mastery of the Greek and Hebrew languages, knowing that there is no equivalent in English to many of the words that get translated. Although, in trying to give broader meaning to the words by putting them in a contemporary context, it does become dated very quickly. Anyway, enough about Pearson. I'm really loving the podcast and look forward to each new episode. I'd love for you guys to check out Twilight Zone show, and particularly this episode called The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street. I think you could have a great discussion about it in the context of the fear and paranoia propaganda of our society. The message of that show is possibly more relevant today than it was when it aired in 1960, and its anti-Cold War message. Nice. Okay, you want to give me a break and you read?
Yeah. How far back are we actually going? Because there's some from July. Okay.
Just keep reading and don't tell people that.
Well, I'm going to bring it up because at this point, Francisco says, also, I want to call out that.
Why'd you skip Eve's?
Because it wasn't about something that we needed to talk about. Read it and then you'll know. Francisco said, also, I want to call out that I think you're doing a better job at responding to feedback in a timely manner.
Oh, this one's from August. This email that he says that it is from August 30th.
Oh, boy. Then.
Okay, well, let me just explain to the audience. Eve is trying, it looks like, to sell us her
yeah.
website design services. Is that right?
Yeah, something like
that. So, sorry, Eve, you got thrown into the mix.
This one is from Casey. Hey, you guys, when are you going to review The Booth at the end of season 2 episodes? Loved your first ones. God bless.
Fair question. And
yeah, when are you going to do those, by the way?
I don't watch
that show, but you do.
I love that show. That should happen. Maybe in December or January. I know we're in December, so that's how soon I want to do it. Okay, let me read next because I have...
No, I'm going to do one more.
Are you done then? Because then I have to... No.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, let me read.
No, I'm going to do one more. This one's from Stephen Walker. Fine. He posted on the Sci-Fi Christians wall. So this is from Facebook. It says, hey guys, listen to episode 78 today. Nice work. Do you remember what that one was?
Oh, yeah.
78.
Just take me a quick second to check it out.
Yeah, no problem.
Episode 78 is when we talked about...
I think it has to do with Batman.
We had Batman month, so that's a really good guess.
Yeah.
Episode 78 was actually referred to as The Dark Knight Revisited, and that's where we... I think we reflected on the movie.
Yeah, and he's talking about the significant difference between auto quality between IMAX and standard versions of The Dark Knight Rises. IMAX was much harder to understand Bane's dialogue. Cheers, Steve. That's true. We talked about that, I think, at one point. We mentioned that.
All right.
Yeah, it was hard to hear his voice.
Episode 79, which was the first time Ben announced he was a Catholic, and I was shocked beyond belief live on the air. So that episode is cool because you actually hear me reacting candidly.
I think the best part of that entire episode is when Ben says, well, I'm converting Catholicism. And you go, okay. off the bat.
I was like, okay, seriously, what do you want? Like, yeah. I didn't believe him at all. I thought he was messing with me. So Mike writes, great episode, guys. I'm glad you chose to share this conversation with us. And again, Ben, I commend you for sharing your journey so openly with all of us. Small quibble. While it's true that Luther didn't have much use for James or Revelation, although he changed his mind on Revelation before all was said and done, he did not remove them from canon. The Jewish rabbis removed the apocryphal books from authoritative status about 200 CE, as I understand it, and this was the rationale the reformers used for removing them from the canon. Although I think a lot of Protestant traditions, mine included, regard them as of some value, though not binding in terms of doctrine. Ben writes, this is Ben DeBono, I agree with your quibble to a point. My comment was more off the cuff than a fully crafted argument. Though Luther's quote about James being an epistle of straw remains unsettling. Regardless of whether their conclusions were right or wrong, I find that the approach the reformers took to the canon is problematic, especially in the case of Luther. That said, I applaud Protestant traditions like yours that hold the deuterocanonical books in high regard. That ought to be common ground for Protestants and Catholics can come together on. Somebody who calls himself Rational N says, well, if someone does convert from Christianity to Catholicism, just please don't convert to one of the killing varieties as detailed in the tombs of historical references such as the Martyrs, Mirror, and Fox's Book of Martyrs. As you know, Rome has a long history of enforcing her will through Inquisition and death. Ben did not like this comment and responded,
wow.
Fact check time. Number one, I'm not converting from Christianity. Last I checked, Catholics are Christian. Number two, a quick check of your blog reveals that you take issue with the persecution of Anabaptists by the Catholic Church. So do I, and so does the modern Catholic Church. You should be aware that Anabaptists were also persecuted by the Protestant Zwingli.
Zwingli.
Yeah, come on, dude. You should be aware that Anabaptists were also persecuted by Protestants. Zwingli was quite fond of drowning them. Honestly, your comment would be offensive if it wasn't so flawed logically and factually. The church needs unity, not cheap shots based on the historical sins of Protestants and Catholics alike. Ben. That sounds like Ben. I like it. Christine wrote, "The episode took me completely by surprise, and I would really like to know more about Ben's views and opinions, which, understandably, they did not really go into in the episode. I grew up with a Catholic father and a Protestant mother. My whole family went to Mass and a Baptist service every week. I did not have First Communion, and when I would have been confirmed as a Catholic, I chose not to, and to be Protestant instead. I still go to Mass with my dad, skipping Communion. I know the reason for my choice, and I'd like to hear what Ben has to say. There are some beliefs you must agree with to be considered Catholic, but putting aside those, there are many that many Christians would agree with, but not all. I really want to know Ben's opinions on some of these." I should bring this back up to him.
Yep, good stuff.
All right, episode 78, called The Dark Knight Revisited, which you just mentioned. Mike has wrote, "Wow, first Ben becomes Roman Catholic, then he starts talking to other podcasts. I don't know who you are anymore." That's very... And then he says that very famous passage. I think he's just making fun of us for not knowing a scriptural reference. Ben is right. None of Nolan's three Batman films still feel very superhero-y. So why is it a problem with Dark Knight Rises? I do think Dark Knight Rises is the weakest of the three for the same reasons John mentioned. Bane's voice, pacing, and implausibility of the falling action. But it's still really solid. What do you think about that, Kobe? Do you think it's really solid and compelling film? You liked it that night.
That's true. But I give it a 4.8, and I would not give it that now. Okay. Not at all. I would give it probably a 4. Maybe a 3.5.
I give it a 5, and I think I'd give it a 4.5. So my views also changed. I was also a little surprised at how nonchalant Bruce seemed to be, that John Blake knew he was Batman. He's talking about Bruce Wayne.
What's he going to do? Like, my Uncle Bruce. Punch him and kill him? No.
Did you know I have an Uncle Bruce?
Now I do.
Okay. And was not sure if we'd see Blake meet Batman as a kid in the first film or something. It seems out of nowhere that we'd have a character who'd piece two and two together, especially when Jim Gordon apparently never did. Matt, regarding the rankings, all I meant was I was hoping Dark Knight Rises would be that much more superior than it was. My basic point was I agreed with you. I was reluctant to say Dark Knight Rises wasn't as good as I'd hoped it would be. No offense meant to you personally, friend. Oh, I don't think I took offense, but... thanks for clearing it up, Mike. Maybe Batman invented transporter technology, but I don't think there is any ambiguity intended. Yes, there's ambiguity in his other films, but there is no ambiguity on that order anywhere else in the Bat trilogy. Well, except maybe Commissioner Gordon's death in The Dark Knight. But even there, we saw no body. As we don't see Bruce Batman's body after the explosion, and the upshot was the character we thought was dead was alive. So, if anything, the Dark Knight's handling of Gordon's death foreshadows Dark Knight Rises' treatment of Batman's death. Illusions don't fix bat signals. True words have never been spoken. I think that was me. So good. Finally, if we get Sci-Fi Christian t-shirts, I want one. Let's do that. 2013, Sci-Fi Christian t-shirts.
We're making many promises. This is insane.
Ben Avery said illusions may not fix bat signals, but Alfred's may be known to. Could happen. And then he went on to say, "Great episode. I love the part where you play my comment and don't listen to it. Good to have Ben back. You can never have too many Bens." Okay, you can read for a bit.
All right.
Well, let's respond to Ben Avery. You can have too many Bens. Okay, go ahead. Let's also respond to Mike. Good job, Mike, as usual.
Way to go, Mike. All right. This one is from Greg Fisher from Iowa.
You are from Iowa.
My home country of Iowa.
What city are you from?
I'm from Hampton, Iowa. So, Greg, it'd be great to find out where you're from, because I don't know if I know where you live, which that's just sounding creepy. I'm sorry. All right. This is a response to the Dark Knight Rises, the review that we did that night, instant reaction. He says, "I was surprised to hear no mention of the parallels to Jesus." And he says, "Because I assumed that it was 3 a.m. Well, yes, of course, that's why. He actually pointed out a few of his own. He put out 8 allegories to Jesus he's seen in a long time. There's the best, or that was the best. Number 1, Batman goes down to hell to fight Bane and appears to lose, just like Jesus appeared to lose when he died on the cross. Bruce is in the pit, or hell, or Sheol, for 30 days, similar to Jesus in the grave for 3 days. I don't know, that's similar. And rises up from the pit. Batman goes into the city to live among people, to live among and help the people he wants to save, even though he could have chosen otherwise. Bane is a deceiver who speaks of freedom, but really causes slavery and destruction, similar to Satan in the Deceiver on Earth. Batman is destroyed by a close companion, one of the 12 board members, like
betrayed.
Judas.
This is betrayed. Batman is betrayed by a close companion.
What did I say?
I think you said destroyed.
Sorry. Betrayed, my bad. Batman chooses to take the bomb out of the city at the cost of his life to save the lives of many. He lays down his life for others. That's like Jesus, I guess. Bruce and Selina get a clean slate, like a new life in Christ. They get to start over fresh and are in a better place. But how does Selina / Catwoman fit into the whole Jesus narrative?
I have a comment on this, and just keep reading and stop when you're done with the numbers. I know he has more to say, but I want to comment on this.
We got one more. The spirit of Batman lives on in Gotham City, empowering the people to have hope and fight for good, similar to the Holy Spirit empowering the followers of Jesus. And that spirit appears to be most in an ordinary orphan boy, Blake. Just like Jesus, he's the least to be the people who spread the gospel.
All right, he has more, and I'm going to let you finish. But first, I just want to say good thoughts and good extractions from Batman and from that story.
Good stuff.
This is what I'm thinking, though. Because we know the Jesus story so much and so well, I think you can almost take out these, you know, similarities from almost any story.
Seriously.
So this is not a critique of Greg or his list, even though, because I think it's good. But it reminds me of, like, I used to work at a Christian bookstore, and we'd have books like Finding God in Harry Potter and Finding God in The Matrix. And there'd be these, you know, popular franchises that people would want to ride the coattails of, so they'd take out all these little themes that do have some Christian elements in them, and then say why this is like Jesus or why this is like the gospel. And it's not really. I mean, that yes, the only thing that's true is that there's truth in the world that reflects back to God. But, and again, I'm not saying this specifically to Greg. It just reminded me of this. I don't think it's fair to always pull these things out and maybe say that there was an intention to make them like Jesus. Unless, I don't know if that's really what he said. Well, he says, the movie seemed to be one of the clearest allegories of Jesus I've seen in a long time. A few of the noticeable ones. So, I don't know. I mean, I can't guess for sure what his intentions were, but I don't think Christopher Nolan was trying to make an allegory of Jesus. And I don't think a lot of the other movies out there that get talked about in this way do always. Even though we can always find these themes, it doesn't. It's just because there is truth in the world, and there are these archetypes that exist. Kobe.
No, I completely agree with you, Matt. I think there's this word called over spiritualization that happens all the time. I mean, you can find Jesus or things of Jesus in every single movie. I mean, how does the hero of a movie always win? Because he sacrifices something of his own.
Yeah, sacrifice.
It happens all the time.
So, again, I feel like we're picking on Greg because it happened to come up during his email. But, yeah, so why don't you read the rest of his?
Greg, this was a great email, by the way. I don't know if these were intentional or not, but the spiritual aspects of the movie seem very clear, and I love the happy ending. As a follower of Christ, I like to see God prevail in movies because I want good to prevail on earth. Or good to prevail in movies, because God's not in that movie, I don't think. I would have been content with Batman dying to save the world, but I found it incredibly awesome that Bruce got to start a new life with presumably a clean slate in another country, and the spirit of Batman will live on in Gotham City with people believing that he had died to save them, and hope rises. Thanks for the great podcast.
I do wish I had given a spoiler alert at the beginning of this feedback show, but you know, okay, whatever.
If you haven't seen it by now, you're not going to see it, so whatever.
You probably should have seen Dark Knight Rises by now, especially for our show.
Yeah, because it's already out on DVD now.
Hey, why don't you read everything that's left, because there's not that much left.
Yep, one last comment from Rick Lee James here.
It's about the Nephilim episode, and what is he saying here? Yeah, go ahead, read it.
I'll read it, and we'll find out. Since the first 11 chapters of Genesis are considered prehistory, but most credible theologians, we might want to be careful with how literal we are with this passage. I believe the word Nephilim is rendered fallen in the Hebrew. The Greek Septuagint translates the word Nephilim as gigantes, gigantic, which we talked about in our show. The Nephilim seem to be a race that came to dominate the pre-flood world, and they were called the children born to the sons of God by the daughters of men and described as giants. And I just want to, because he mentioned a passage in there, and the passage is Genesis 6:4, which says, the Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and also afterward, where the sons of God came into the daughters of man, and they bore children to them. These were mighty men who were of old, the men of renown. He goes on to say, since they were mentioned almost simultaneous to God's statement that he would destroy the earth by flood, and it seems that the effect they had on mankind was a big justification for the flood. Needless to say, I didn't go to the story when trying to share the gospel with a non-believer.
Yeah, I wouldn't fair. Either. This is kind of, yeah. So since they are mentioned also simultaneously to God's statement that he would destroy, it seems that the effect they had on mankind was a big justification.
Yeah.
It does.
So apparently they're bad.
Yeah. I'm trying to think back to what I thought my explanation was really good, and I think it was kind of tied in that this word meant that they had mixed religious beliefs, and so that they were living sort of an idolatrous, evil lifestyle.
Yep.
And so in that case, then he would be right that idolatrous lifestyle was justification for the flood, but it would have to be on such a global
scale.
Thank you. So yeah, good thoughts, Rick. I'm glad you responded to that. I thought the episode was pretty fun.
Yeah, I thought it was one of our better episodes, to be honest. I can't believe you didn't put it on our top five and you put the Scientology one in there, but that's okay.
Yeah, and Kobe is alluding to the nominees for this year's podcast.
Yeah.
Well, not the podcast awards. This year's awards for the end of the year listener appreciation jubilee, which is coming up in episode 100. Speaking of episode 100, 25 episodes earlier, we had episode 75. That was called The Dark Knight Rises Journey. So what I did on this episode was I edited – this took a ton of long time. I edited together all the clips of our Batman news segment. So we call it Dark Knight Rises News.
Yep.
So I went through, got all the clips and put it together so people could look and see how is this progression – what's this journey?
It was actually kind of cool.
I thought it was cool. It's kind of like a highlight reel of just the news.
Yeah.
It's super time-consuming. And again, you may have heard me announce this on an earlier episode, but I'm not doing – a highlight reel for 2012 because it's so much work to listen to all of our episodes and pick out the parts that I think were most interesting or most funny.
And I think the end of the year will be kind of like a highlight episode.
Yeah, I think it will. Because last year we had the end of the year listener appreciation jubilee and we had the highlight reel, and the highlight reel ended up being 3 hours long.
That was way too long.
But if you think about it, I had to listen to all the episodes and then edit out the parts and then put it together to make it cool. Super time consuming. So I'm not going to do it. I will, however, pay somebody to do it for me. So if somebody creates...
You shouldn't have said pay.
Yeah, I'll pay them with like books or DVDs for my shelf. So if somebody creates a highlight reel...
With gratitude.
No, I'll give them something. I'll mail you out something from me. Maybe some books and a movie. But it's going to be used. I'm not going to pay for something like with real money.
Technically, you're not getting paid. You're just getting stuff Matt doesn't want.
If somebody wants to put together a highlight reel, that would be sweet. I would love that. And then I'll put it out. And then something that you edited together exists in the Sci-Fi Christian feed. So and if multiple people do it, I'll give people multiple things.
And first, let us know if you are interested. Don't just start making one.
No, just start making it.
No.
And send it to me, and I'll check it out. And I'll send you something used from my home. Maybe.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, maybe it'll be like a group of cups that I don't want anymore. Maybe some cups.
You give away your computer. No, you don't use that.
Not my computer. Often. Maybe like a water bottle. Like, oh, I'm done with this water bottle. Here, I'll give it to...
That's sick, dude.
Okay. Well, anyways, the point is I need somebody else to do it because I don't have time. And I do want it to exist.
And it's not going to be any of us.
All of this came up because the Dark Knight Rises Journey, episode 75, was a highlight reel of the Batman news. And here's what Mike wrote. Thanks for putting this together, Matt. I confess, some weeks later, I skipped the Dark Knight Rises news segments for fear of getting spoiled. So it was fun to catch up. Oh, and I meant to ask, what upcoming movie is a Sci-Fi Christian podcast going to follow obsessively now? Kobe, what do you want to follow? If you're going to be on the news episodes, I think you can pick the topic.
I really think we should start looking at Avengers 2.
Right now? Like everything that has to do with Avengers. Avengers news.
Including separate films. Because Iron Man 3 comes out in what? Just 5 months.
Do you want to call it Avengers Phase 2 News? Well, maybe we have to figure out a better name.
Yeah, a better name for sure.
All right. That idea is on the table for 2013. Watch for that in 2013. The Avengers Phase 2 News.
Because summer 2014. Avengers 2.
2015.
2015. Yeah, oh, so my gosh, I'm so sorry.
We would
2015.
Have to, the only problem with that is we'd have to do this news segment for 2 years.
Well, a lot of it would be things that are happening sooner, and it wouldn't just be about the Avengers as a whole. Okay. Like, Iron Man 3 comes out soonish.
All right. I think that that sounds like a pretty good idea, actually, because it's superhero-y, which we like, and it's Avengers, which will have plenty of content, because we can talk about Ant-Man, Guardian of the Galaxy, Captain Black America Panther. 2. Maybe Black Panther? Maybe Doctor Strange, if that finally comes out, so...
I doubt it.
No, that's going to happen.
No, it won't.
Yes.
No.
Watch for us an announcement about Doctor Strange soon.
Soon.
Well,
ish.
Thanks for all of your feedback. I'm shutting out the music because I forgot to say.
Oh my gosh.
This is a feedback episode. And I never told people how to actually leave feedback. They're never gonna hear this because this is a really long one. You can leave feedback at. You can email us at feedback@thescifichristian.com. You can write me at matt@thescifichristian.com. Or you can write Kobe at
Kobe. You can
Kobe.
Write Kobe at thescifichristian.com.
You can also phone call us at 612-4121-SFC. You can always check us out on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter. There's tons of ways to do it. Leave your feedback for us. We love it, and we'll play it in 3 to 4 months. Well, that's all from here. I'm Matt Anderson.
I'm Kobe Radcliffe.
And we are the Sci-Fi Christians.
Signing off.
Signing off.